Moses, host of the Do It Now podcast, and I am incredibly honored and excited to interview today Laura Carney, who is the author of My Father's List. And I am wondering, Laura, if you can tell me a little bit about your background and your career in writing and all that.
Sure. Well, I've actually mostly been a copy editor for national magazines for about 20 years. But I always really loved being a full-time copy editor because it meant whenever a writing opportunity came up, I was in the right place. You know, like I could hear about it, but it wasn't the type of situation where I felt like I had to produce, like I had to write every single day. So I was there fixing everybody's spelling errors. And then once in a while, I would get a chance to write something. And I mean, that's sort of how I really got into writing at a national level. Mm-hmm. I still was honing my craft in that I was working for literary journals. My husband started a literary journal in Seattle. And then he moved to New York after he met me. And, you know, that's just a passion project. I would just do that for free. And then once I was working for magazines, I would hear about opportunities to recap TV shows. And then I started doing that for free. So really, a lot of my training, you know, post college was just things I was doing just because I enjoyed doing it and I wasn't necessarily being compensated for it. But then I did have a few reporter jobs. I had a few, you know, a few opportunities to develop some clips, you know, enough so that by the time, you know, a chance opened up at Good Housekeeping where I was working full time, which I always considered be my dream job because it took 8 years, but I did get a job at a national magazine. By the time a chance opened up for me to write something, you know, the editor of the, I guess it would be called the lifestyle section, that editor didn't question whether I would be able to do it or not. Right. And I was very sneaky about it actually, because what happened was the editor in chief, we got a new editor in chief, and mm-hmm. she was very like, I don't care who has the idea. A great idea is a great idea. So that was her mentality. And one day she asked the entire staff, what's your favorite Christmas memory? So I thought, this is my chance, you know? So I gave her like an entire page worth of a memory that was really a story that was, that later would end up going into my book, which was a story about my husband proposing to me. And it happened at Christmas. And she came up to me like a couple of days later, and I didn't think she even knew my name. But right. She was like, Laura, I loved what you gave me so much. I want to turn it into an entire article in the magazine.
Wow.
But the only catch is I have to do it next year because that December issue was already like, you know, it was already mapped out. That's how magazines work. So that I think was really my first magazine writing opportunity, like at that level, at the national level. So shortly after that, that was when I started my activism with distracted driving because of how my dad was killed. And I went to a conference for it and I came back and I had learned so much about it that I thought it was really important that the magazine cover it. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, I also was working on an article for the Washington Post about distracted driving, but also about my experience with it. Mm-hmm. So the editor at Good Housekeeping said, you know, I only wish you had written it for us. And they said yes to the story, but their only caveat was that they didn't want me to write it because they thought I was a little bit too close to the situation. I thought, fine, great, I don't care. I'm just thrilled that you're going to cover this topic and that I could bring it to you. But then we found my dad's bucket list. And I shared that information with my editor. And my editor found my blog and she saw what I was writing on the blog about that experience. And she showed it to her editor and she was like, oh no, wait, no, this is the story. So when I started my project to do my late father's bucket list, Good mm-hmm. Housekeeping had a 3-page article mm-hmm. by me. So mm-hmm. I mean, right away I was already getting press and, you know, it wasn't how I ever thought I would establish myself as a writer, but it's just how it happened. It, you know, it was the weirdest thing. For years and years and years, I would come up with an idea for a pitch, for a story, just like I did when I was in college, and it wouldn't land. I couldn't get anyone to say yes to it, unless it was one of those like writing for free situations right. where it's just a passion project. Mm-hmm. And most of the time I found I just didn't have ideas like I used to have. I mean, when I was like a newspaper reporter in college, just the local, you know, like the college newspaper, I had so many ideas. So now I think what happened was when my father died and I went through that tragedy, I knew deep inside of me that that was the story I needed to tell. Mm-hmm. It just mattered more than anything else. So that's why I couldn't get so excited anymore. But then once I finally started telling that story in drips and drabs, whether that's that first, you know, even that first essay that I sneaked my way into Good Housekeeping was about my dad, because that the proposal was part of that. Because the way my husband proposed was by putting it under the star on the Christmas tree, which was just like the star my dad used to let me put on the tree. So that was part of the story. And then, you know, the Washington Post article, and then I pitched something to Runner's World. And basically what was happening was every single time I was starting to sort of tell this story, I would get a yes right away. It was really incredible.
Wow. And just so our listeners understand, can you tell a little bit more about how your dad passed away and what age you were, what age he was, so they can understand about the distracted driving?
Yeah, my dad was 54 when he was killed by a teenager who was a distracted driver. She was lost. That's what I was told. She was lost, and she was making a phone call at a red light. And then she ran through the next red light, which he was turning left at. I was told he died instantly. He was 54 and I was 25, and I had just left home. So basically, I just moved to New York. I was just starting out in the world.
Wow, that must have been an incredibly painful and sad time. And I can only imagine that finding a way to educate other people has been like a big why of you writing this book and telling your story and sharing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting because for such a long time, I looked at what happened as almost like it was a component of luck, you know, almost like, you know, well, this seems like such a fluke thing to have happened. And, you know, why my family and why my father? And mm-hmm. I almost felt feelings of embarrassment in addition to the loss, because I just felt like I couldn't talk about it with anybody. Because I would go out and I'm trying to make new friends. I'm living in a new city, and people generally didn't want to talk about it because it's very scary, you know, but that's also like what I'm going through. And, you know, the year before this happened, I had also gone through something pretty traumatic with, I had been going to therapist for a depression diagnosis as a teenager, and I've been doing that for several years. And then I had this one year where this doctor was very ambitious and had me on like as many as 9 medications at one time. And then I had to go to a hospital the week after my college graduation just to get off all of them. Mm-hmm. So one of the results of that experience was that I felt really emboldened. I felt like, okay, if I want to move to New York, like what's the worst that's going to happen? You know, the scariest thing that could ever happen to me just happened to me. And I was ready to just reinvent myself, I think, and start a new life. So to have my father die the way that he did only a year after, mm-hmm. and I had just met my future husband the same summer, like he met my dad 5 days before he died. So it was just almost like it was just too much. And I didn't know how to process it at only 25. I couldn't find support. And on top of that, I'm now refusing to see therapists or counselors because of the experience I just had with them. Right. So I think it just primed me to write about it. That mm-hmm. was the only thing that I had. Mm-hmm. So I started writing about it, and, you know, I wasn't doing it on purpose. It just sometimes would come out of me. I had to find some way to deal with it. And I think what ended up happening when we found the list was, you know, I just started looking at what happened as something that I could accept had happened. That doesn't mean it's acceptable. It just means I had to find a way to have it make sense in my life.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. And I'm definitely relating to you a lot because I have lost a number of family members in the last year and a half, and a few of them quite tragically. And that idea of there being no understanding of it or no explanation of it. But I use this word radical acceptance. I just, there's no changing it. There's no going back. There's no explaining it or understanding it. And I need to radically accept it. And then what do I do with it? Right? Because when something like this happens in our lives, there is this, I think, natural desire to want to give meaning to it, or to want to at least not let their lives have been in vain. And I'm just sort of curious if when you found your father's bucket list, was it to make some kind of meaning, or was it to honor him? Because you found his bucket list, and then it wasn't just about writing the book, right? It was about achieving all of the things on his bucket list.
Well, I mean, at that point in time, I'd been an activist for a couple years. And one of the things I found myself experiencing was I would go to these conferences, and I remember one conference in particular I had been invited to go to, because I was mainly doing my activism as a runner. Like, as a journalist, I would get people's articles placed in places like the Washington Post because I had those connections, or I would do it myself, or I would raise thousands of dollars via running a marathon. So that was sort of how I was doing it. I did speak in one school, but that didn't end up being a thing that I was doing regularly. So I got invited to go to this conference by someone who was impressed with the work I was doing. And even that came to me quite by accident. I was working at Good Housekeeping one day, and an article came across my desk about distracted driving. I didn't even know what it was until it happened. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, this is fate, because I wouldn't even be sitting here at this desk at Good Housekeeping if I didn't use the insurance money from my dad's car crash to be here, if I hadn't been so persistent about getting this job. So I looked into it, I started doing that. And then when I went to the conference, they kept talking about how to tell your story. They were really trying to train each of these people. Sometimes it would be a couple members of the family of the person who died. Sometimes it might be someone who was in a crash themselves. Like, they were training them, how do you connect with people such that they'll actually have compassion about this event that has happened to you, which is like far more common than people understand it to be. Mm-hmm. And I just kept sitting there thinking, I already know how to do that. You know, like, that's what I've been trained to do. Like, I'm a journalist, and we know how to tell stories. And I just kept thinking, someone has to write a book about this. You know, this needs to be in popular culture in some way. Mm-hmm. And maybe that someone is me. I mean, it might just have to be me, because I haven't met anybody else yet who is a journalist. So I sort of had that seed in the back of my head. And, you know, I got the go ahead with the distracted driving article in Good Housekeeping right before I got married. So mm-hmm. at least I was now getting married feeling like, okay, I can tolerate that I feel a real loss because my dad's not walking me down the aisle. Like, I can tolerate that maybe people feel sorry for me, that this isn't how I thought it was going to go. Like, I can deal with that because at least I've done something. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to get an article into the world at a magazine where 21 million people might read it. So I felt better about it. But basically, it wasn't until I guess we found the list that I felt like things were falling into place in a way that I needed them to. So I needed to tell a narrative. You know, I needed to write a book that was about a person's life. And a lot of the way we were being taught with activism to tell stories was tell them every single detail of how this person died. And it used to kind of drive me crazy that I was reliving my dad's death, like, in a very difficult way every time I would do this. But it's like, you have to, you know, you have to send the message home that this is how scary it is and this is how bad it is. And I appreciate that people do that, because I think it is something that people need to understand and they need to know, but it didn't feel like it was the right path for me.
Right, right.
And for me, sir, go ahead.
Well, I was seeing how when you were saying that they were telling you how to share every detail of how they died, and I feel like your book instead tells a lot of details of how he lived. Was that your—
That's exactly right. And when the list showed up, my brother had it for 13 years. He'd had it in a box. He had never looked at it. And he discovered it because he was moving into his first house that he bought with his fiance. He was going to get married in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I had just gotten married 6 months prior. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the timing of this is weird, mm-hmm. you know, because it's like my dad's spirit surely is happy that we're both getting married.
Yes.
you know, and is like around us. And to have it show up right in between the two weddings and right as I was going to visit my brother in support of him making this very adult decision, even though I was a little bit jealous of it because I hadn't done that yet. Right. But to me, that was like this, like I couldn't think of better timing for something like this to show up. And as soon as I saw it, it was like I got this reminder of who my dad was and all the things that he cared about. I mean, it wasn't a surprise that he did something like this. He made lists all the time and had a lot of dreams. So, you know, when I was surprised I didn't know about it, but I wasn't super shocked that he did it. But to have that reminder of how much he loved life, you know, I needed that for a number of reasons, not just because it was going to help my activism, because that was my first thought, right? My first thought was, I've not been doing activism in a way that is right for me. This feels right to me. This feels like this is my chance to write that book that I felt needed to exist, mm-hmm. that maybe only I could write. And my dad is giving me the chapters, you know, he's giving me, here's how you need to do this. So it felt like that. But then the other thing that I think I had going on was I was really just dissatisfied with my life. I think I had this idea that once the wedding was over, I would have crossed some kind of like finish line and now everything was going to be wonderful like for the rest of my life. And then it's, go ahead.
No, I just say we all think that, right? And it's just not the truth. It's
I mean, I think I just didn't know. Like, I didn't prepare very well for what that was going to look like. And I didn't, you know, I think a big part of it for me was we had been together for 13 years. And, you know, it was going to kind of still be like that. It was going to be this person I love who I've been with for this long. But I wanted to have a wedding, you know, just for us, for our own reasons. But I also felt like I was satisfying some kind of like societal standard by having the wedding. And then I realized shortly after I got married, oh, now everyone expects me to change. Like, it seems like everyone expects my focus in life to be motherhood, to be buying a house, to be having this like settling down kind of energy. Because it's just assumed you just got married. Of course, you're going to do that. Oh, you must be dying to do that if it's been 13 years. And that wasn't the way we felt at all. We were talking about we want to travel the country and become travel writers and travel photographers and go on all these adventures. And it was like that was exciting to us. And we were totally on the same page with it. But everyone else kind of thought we were crazy because it just didn't seem like what you're supposed to do. So I was going through a little bit of like an identity crisis because, you know, my whole life I knew I was creative, but I also hated the idea of standing out. Like I hated not belonging to something. And this was like basically the first time in my life where, I mean, and even, you know, even with the hospital, even with the depression stuff, even with the way my dad died, I still was obsessed with like, I just want to fit in and be accepted and be seen as normal. And this was the first time that I really like, it was going to be impossible for me. I could not do that. Like I was an artist and I had to find a way to accept that that's who I am. So I didn't know it in the moment that I decided I was going to finish the list and write a book about it, but I needed that. Like it was going to help me to find that because I think when you're in it, like you don't know you're stuck, right?
Right. And you wouldn't have had the opportunity to go and live out on the bucket list if you were having children and buying a house and all those big pressures that get put on us. Right. So
maybe yeah. We'll never know, I guess.
I'm curious because is it correct that there were 54 items on the bucket list?
Yeah. I
mean, that sounds like such an ambitious bucket list. I've created my own. It has less than 10. I mean, I'm sure I'll add to it as I get older, but I'm just curious, was that who your dad was? He just had big dreams, but a lot of them? I mean, can you tell me?
Yeah. We asked my mom later who knew about it. Like she saw it when he made it, because he made it the year I was born. We're like, you know, did he write this in one sitting? Like how did this pan out? And she's like, no, I think he just added to it. You know, he'd put it down, he'd pick it back up again. And she figured he probably didn't take more than a year. And I mean, I think there were only like two different color inks on it. So you could tell that you could tell that he'd been checking it off. I mean, he had five of the items checked off.
What were the five? I'm just curious what he had done for you.
The five items were, let's see. Okay, he had be interviewed on the radio. That was one that he did. I think he probably did that in a salesman capacity because he was a salesman. He had own a great record collection, which I am a lucky inheritor of half of it. He had help my parents enjoy their retirement. He had attend a World Series game, and my brother remembered when he did that, and he wrote the score underneath of it. And then let's see, what was the other one? What was the other one that he did? Do a monologue in a stand-up comedy nightclub.
Wow, these
And
are
he
so,
was very funny, so I'm not surprised that he did that.
yeah, but they're so diverse and so interesting. And I'm just curious, you completed all, was it 54 or 56 of them?
54.
And can I ask you, were there any that were scary or outside of your comfort zone? Because it's one thing to put things down on our own bucket list and do them, that might even be, but to do someone else's, was there one
Yeah.
or that?
Almost all of them were. I mean, a good number of them were. Skydive at least once was very scary to me. Surf in the Pacific Ocean. I'd never tried surfing before. What else? What else? Write and have a few novels published. That's number three. Because, I had tried writing a book a couple of times. I wanted to write a memoir about the experiences I had when I was 25, but I would always chicken out. I'd always give up on it. So it was like the fact that he wanted to write and have a few novels published meant to me, oh, when I do write the book about this experience, that's what that's going to be about. It's going to be that item. So and I can't give up this time. I mean, that really is the main reason I never gave up on the book.
Wow, this is incredible. This is really incredible because that's a big thing to achieve. And even the skydiving to me is something that I don't think that I could actually do. And yet if you had, your why was so big and your reason was so big to do it, were there any that you almost chickened out of and didn't do or got really close, but then just like you said, you
I mean,
had.
there were some that took a few tries. And I mean, what I gradually learned is that each item was going to play out the way it was going to play out, which is, I mean, I know people who talk about manifesting things, they say that all the time. And I was sort of learning how that works, as I was living this. So I would think something was going to be a certain way. And then it would always just, most of the time, something embarrassing and hilarious would happen.
Really?
Yeah, and that happened early. Like, for example, the first one I did was Run 10 Miles Straight, which I almost included in the scary ones when you just asked me that. But then I kind of didn't because I thought, I mean, I was a marathon runner. So for me personally, it wasn't as scary as it might be to someone who's never run a mile. But I had never done it without stopping. So the marathon I had run was the New York Marathon, and I still stopped to walk once in a while, and this time I couldn't do that. And it didn't really occur to me that, oh, I might need a bathroom break in the middle of those 10 miles. Like I really just never even thought about it. And then on top of that, we got out to LA. I was doing it in the LA Marathon, and my husband had a cold, and I felt like a little bit of a scratch in my throat. So I got really worried about I'm getting it too, and I overhydrated. So I'm drinking all of this orange juice and, things that are going to make you pee. So I did spend the majority of those 10 miles peeing my pants, which was like humiliating, right? But also hilarious.
Yes, and also talk about grit and determination. And one of the most important things that I now embrace at this age in my life, finally, is not caring what other people think. Like, what I'm saying? It's you needed to do this. You couldn't stop. You did what you had to do. And I think a lot of us would have had to have done the same thing. And so it's being brave enough to not care what other people think is such a beautiful strength to have. It took me a long time to gain that. But it sounds like doing some of your dad's things helped you, some of the things on his bucket list helped you to become maybe braver or more tenacious, or was this always part of your personality?
Oh, I don't think so. I was a risk taker, but yeah, I think that the courage I discovered while doing this had always been there. I just hadn't been challenging myself enough to find it. you know, because you don't know the skills and the strengths that you have unless you actually try new things and you actually push yourself. So I think that's what, I don't think it was like it was new, like I just was developing it. I think it, what I was developing though was just this comfort level with uncertainty, with the fact that, okay, something crazy is probably going to happen. When I went skydiving, I threw up midair, you know, and it was apple. Luckily it was an apple, so it wasn't that bad, but I also was checking off speak to a TV audience. So I was doing it on TV.
Oh, you
were? So when I landed, I was going to be interviewed with apple puke all over my shirt, which we laughed about it. The reporter and I were like, oh my God, how funny. And then, you know, when I did ride a horse fast, the horses were very slow and they were pooping the whole time. And I was like, well, that poops pretty fast. You know, it was like, it was stuff like that just kept happening to a point where I started to view failure or disappointment or, you know, this isn't quite how I thought it would be. Like, basically, I think what was happening there was I was loosening control over the things I was trying and at the same time recognizing how funny the thing was and recognizing that's my dad's humor. Because that's who he was. He would not take himself very seriously. And he listed these things for the fun of it. So he would have loved to have had a great story about the crazy thing that happened when he tried riding a horse, you know, like that's who he was. So that's what he was giving me. And it made it so much more memorable for me and whoever was doing it with me, like my cousin who was there, who had volunteered. And I mean, quite honestly, like even, you know, I got so many life skills from doing this project that changed me forever. But the even greater gift was the connection that I learned how to experience again and really learned how to experience in a way I never had before, because I'd always been kind of more of a reserved person. Even though I like to talk, I wasn't super outgoing. But this was forcing me to be outgoing because I had to be available if someone could help me. And I had 54 things I had to do. And then what would always happen was once I was in the thing that the person was doing with me, it was like, it was such an authentic experience. And here I'm forcing myself to have beginner's mind and be a student or whatever they have to give me. And they're just doing it out of, you know, the goodness of their heart and how many other experiences in their life were they doing regularly that were like that. So it would do something to both of us, no matter who it was. And I mean, the other cool part of that was basically I found 54 ways to stay connected to my dad, but through other people.
Wow, that's so incredible. I'm just curious, did you and your husband create your own bucket lists after?
Yeah, we each have one. Yeah, his is a lot shorter than mine. Yeah. I just keep adding to mine. I need to stop.
Like your dad, you're gonna have,
yeah, my father's daughter.
Beautiful. That's so beautiful. Wow. Have you had a lot of people reach out to you about the book? And just, it must be
incredible. Yeah, I'm still getting used to it. It's a weird thing. You know, I had an inclination that I liked public speaking. Like I did it when I was a kid and I was in, like, you know, student council and stuff and would have to give speeches. And my dad actually trained me in public speaking when I was a kid because he could tell how shy and quiet I was. I mean, he had no idea how much he was actually preparing me for life. But yeah, to find now how much I really enjoy it and how much I like sitting in front of a room and connecting with people and telling them stories. And, you know, they sit there and they're rapt. Like I have their attention and they're laughing and they're engaged. And it's just, all of the talks I've done have gone really well. So that's kind of new. And something like weird happens to me when I'm talking about the book too. Like I have a blackout experience. I don't know if you ever go through that. Do you ever experience that when you're talking about very personal things on stage?
I don't think that's happened recently, but I can imagine you just being so maybe passionate about the subject you're speaking about. Is that what you're talking about? Or
I think it's like I get into flow and I'm almost channeling something that's bigger than me.
Oh, that's amazing. That's incredible.
And I don't know if that means like how a psychic medium channels a spirit or if it means I'm just a writer who's channeling my subconscious And it's like something clicks in and I become someone suddenly who can do what is required of me in that moment. Whereas I wouldn't think of myself that way the rest of the time. And what usually happens is I get so in it and I'm so in flow that later, like if you were to ask me an hour after I give one of these bookstore talks, what did I just talk about? Like, I wouldn't be able to tell you. Like, it would take until the next day for it to start. Like little pieces will start coming back as though you had been drinking and you blacked out. I mean, it's a rush. Maybe it's the adrenaline too. I don't know. It's amazing. But, you know, to be someone who's now become almost like a figurehead for this idea of intentional living and a new way of processing grief. I mean, I don't know how new it is, but people seem to think of it as new. And even my writing, you know, like even having people respond to my writing this way, it's just been incredible. It's been quite overwhelming at times, honestly, because it's, I mean, this is my first book. Mm-hmm. I haven't written other books, you know?
Well, that leads me to my next question. Are there other books on the horizon? And what is
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to keep my options open as far as what I do next, because that's one thing the list really taught me was that I just need to keep pursuing my curiosity and what I'm passionate about and what I think needs to be said. Because clearly this was a thing I felt like needed to be said. There were a couple parts of the book that I felt like needed to be said by someone, and I just allowed it to be me, basically. And I think if I'm passionate enough about something, I will put it into a book. I mean, one thing I've been thinking about doing is I'm thinking about putting together a compilation of stories about amazing women who were trailblazers, but who did things before anybody did. So basically like a human being who did something for the first time and she just happened to be female, like before any men did. Because a lot of times these people, we don't even, they're lost to history because men wrote history books. And I just kept finding them. Like that was sort of like a secret to me being able to do the list items, was that I would find some incredible woman who was like the first ever skydiver. You know, it's like, I've never heard of this person before. Here I thought men like skydiving more than women would. And turns out it's a feminine activity. And that just kept happening. You know, it would be like my secret weapon in my back pocket. Like I know a woman did this and she was awesome at it. So I feel like something has to be done with those stories that I found, you know, like I want to put them together somehow. I'm thinking about maybe, I haven't figured it out yet, but if I do it personal narrative, it might be my bucket list that I'm doing next. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get like this weird chill comes over me when I say that because it scares the crap out of me. And I don't know if the world cares about that, quite honestly, but you know what? It doesn't matter because the world didn't really seem to care about distracted driving very much either, but I did. And that's what matters.
Yeah. I mean, what I've been learning recently is that anytime something feels scary or fearful or, you know, I don't want to do it, it's where I need to exactly go because.
Oh yeah.
I think that is the perfect idea for you. And I love the idea too of the women, because I would have to look it up on my phone, but my daughter in school a few years back, they would have the kids read as a historical character, and she was dressed up and I'm blanking now. We were always told it was a man and the man's name of who rode, what was it? The Pony Express and rode at midnight. I'm trying to look it up here.
Are you getting me a new woman for my list?
I'll have to look it up or ask my daughter and tell you, but we have all been told in history books that it was this man and the man's name. And it turns out it was a young woman. I think she was only 16 years old. Yeah. And she rode the horse to take the message. It was, you can tell my memory.
There's so many stories like that. And I mean, one good sign I feel like that I'm supposed to do this book is that it's coming to me all the time. Like people are coming up with stories to tell me, or even like, you know, just this week, I was copying a book about ancient Mesopotamia, which was just random freelance assignment that I got because I still copy edit. And in the middle of the book, they're like, oh, the first known published author was a woman.
Wow.
She was Mesopotamian. And it's like, what? I didn't learn that in sixth grade when we learned about, you know, ancient cultures. And when things show up like that, it's like I've planted the seed, I've set the intention, and now the universe is going to start cooperating. That's what I found happens. And You know, I love the stuff that you talk about. Like, I was watching your YouTube clips, and it seems like you sort of cover that ground too. Have you found that to be the case with manifesting things?
Absolutely. I mean, one of my sort of simplest things that I say all the time is, you know, I wake up looking for the good and I find the good, and I want you to find it too. It's that we, whatever you're putting your attention on and looking and expecting to find, you're going to find it. Like, certainly currently what I'm talking to a lot of people about is they're reaching out to me because I'm a life coach as well. And they'll be very upset and stressed out. And, you know, the economy's horrible and the world's ending and we're hearing this and what, you know, and they're whole mind is about that. And I said, if you're looking for that, you will absolutely find evidence of that. But if you want to believe something else and look for evidence of something else, you will find that as well. So if you want to go look for evidence of abundance and things going well and life being easy for you, it really, truly, we find what we're looking for. And I think it's great. You, like, as you mentioned, you're looking now for this evidence of women who were the first to do things, and it's going to start coming to you everywhere. And it's
it is, yeah, to you everywhere.
And it's the thing also of that sort of surrendering into it. It's going to come very easily to you now that you've, what's the word that I like to use? You just sort of allow the universe to unfold as it should.
It's a surrender. Yeah. I mean, I work on that a lot. I still say it in my prayers a lot, like use me, show me what I'm supposed to do, because that's, you know, halfway through the list, I started developing that philosophy because I recognize I'm doing something bigger than me here. You know, I'm channeling a message that's bigger than me, and I have to commit to it because I told myself I was going to do this. And, you know, I love my dad, so that's why I'm going to do it. And at some point, it started becoming more about my dreams than about his. And I think that was just his dream for me to be happy. I mean, I think that was his dream too, you know. But yeah, I think you're right. And you know, if anything, I'm also sort of writing the second book or the second story, or I don't know yet what the medium of it's going to be, but I'm also making it for me because, like my husband said, he thought the title of the book should be A Woman Got There First. And I, at the time, was saying, hey, I have never heard of anybody else who did their father's bucket list and then wrote a book about it. And so it's like, who do I turn to for guidance about this thing I just did? Nobody. Like, I might be one of the women, so why not write a guide to being one of those women? I don't know.
I love that. Oh, I love that. That's, it's certainly needed right now. Absolutely. I mean, I still all the time, I have three daughters, and I still all the time say, I can't believe we haven't had a female president. And I would love someone actually to write a book about all the countries that have had female leaders and how those countries have done, you know, during those times of having female leaders, because from what I hear, it's gone pretty smoothly, you know? And
yeah, I mean, I have to say that this particular feeling that I'm having now of wanting a guide to being unique in something, far better feeling of isolation than the first one was. Because if you look back to the reason I started the book, other than the activism, other than making sense of my dad's death and finding closure in it, really, that's, it was about me finding a place where I belonged. It was, I don't feel like I fit in with what is being told to me, that I'm who I'm supposed to be. So I got to find who I am while doing this. And now I'm here, but I also sort of am like, well, okay, what does that look like? I guess we're going to invent it as we go.
And it sounds like you're also embracing being unique and your unique voice, which is what I have done late in life too, because I spent, you know, the first 53 years of my life caring so much what everyone thought, being a people pleaser, not, you know, not using my voice until I had these major tragic events one after another, until you finally go, wait a second, who cares what anyone else thinks? I have to embrace being my unique self and have a voice and use my voice. And I was able to, I think when you hit rock bottom, you just realize there's nothing more important than living the life that I was supposed to live. There was a calling put upon me that God, you know, gave me certain gifts or certain message that I want to share with the world. And it would be a travesty to not live that out because of what other people think or because of fear. So I had to do a lot of work around that. But in the end, what it has shown to me is that I am unique and I am different and I'm not like other people. And I think I spent the first part of my life wanting, as you said, right, to just be like everybody else or be, you know, normal or whatever that is. Well, that's pretty boring. It's not very exciting. And it's, I don't think it's why God put us on this earth, right?
No, well, I mean, I think if you have a yearning in your heart, God put it there. You know, it's not because you're weird. Like, it's not because, you know, normal isn't enough for you. Like, that's kind of the language we're given, right? And it's like, well, then why is this thing here that I can't, you know, it's like Ariel in The Little Mermaid. You know, she has the dream song of wanting to go up where the people are. Like, there must be some reason that she wants to be there because she was supposed to be, you know, like, for lack of a better example.
Yes, but I think it's that creative mind, right? And it needs to be free, and it can't fit in a box, and it's not supposed to fit in a box and be like everyone else's, you know.
Well, that's who my dad was. I mean, look at the variety of things on this list. He was an extremely creative person, and when he died, I partly resented it that he was so creative because he was always switching from job to job. He was always had a different car, a different girlfriend. Like, he just wasn't someone who stayed in one place. And as a teenager, I would be like, oh God, why? Like, I wish like it weren't changing all the time. And I would get excited about your new scheme. And then now you have another scheme. You know, I was like, that's how it was. But I reached a point in my life where I realized I'm the same way. I'm just like that. And I think if I didn't have this list to guide me through that experience, it might have played out in a more difficult way. I might have viewed it as something wrong with me.
Yeah. And instead, it sounds like it's also been a great gift from him, but also I feel like you speak about it as if the relationship is still alive and vibrant with your dad.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to be careful with that. I realize sometimes when I use present tense, that sounds a little strange to people.
It's not strange. I actually found it beautiful that because I want to honor and remember the people who are gone. And sometimes I say I'm living a life for three now because I lost my brother and I lost my cousin very recently. They're both 49 years old. And that's also why I'm more brave and I do more things though, is because I decided I'm living for three now. And I sort of link my arm in both of theirs and I walk forward with more courage and more intention. And I think it's a beautiful way to honor people that we've lost and for them not to be forgotten, because you're keeping him in conversation, everyday conversation. You're talking about him because of the book, right?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I feel like, I'm just wondering if you, this is going to sound weird, but do you still feel close to your dad?
Yeah, I'm closer than I was when he was living. The reason for that is the forgiveness. It's the gratitude. And weirdly enough, I'm closer to my mom and my stepdad too. And I mean, the reason for that is because when you learn how to forgive someone, it sort of just starts to become a domino effect in your life. So anything you're ever resentful about with anyone just becomes easier to resolve. I mean, at least that's how it was for me. I needed to deal with things like I was just talking about, like that resentment about him not having the stability I wanted a father to have or thought a father was supposed to have. Once I could deal with that and let that go and actually find appreciation for what he gave me, you know, and I've had so many people tell me, you know, that when reading the book, oh, my dad wasn't even around growing up. And you're so lucky that you had someone who was so invested. I mean, even though he was divorced, he was still so invested in my life. So I think something started happening with my grief where as I'm living out his dreams, I'm starting to have empathy for him more just as a human and not just a daughter-father relationship anymore. It's helping me to understand myself better and the parts, I'm not resisting the parts of me that are like him. And I'm realizing, oh, I can use them for good. You know, I can like choose to look at it as a good thing as opposed to why am I so different, you know? And as that started happening, I just started accepting if I had a feeling that he was communicating with me, if I had a sense that, you know, in the beginning, I would hear like two or three word phrases in my head that were things he would say. Like, I think that happened in the beginning mostly because I was so scared of what I was doing, you know? So it was like, I needed to feel like there was something bigger than me. But now it's like, you know, I just see things here and there, like little things that are like code for us that I know are like his sign, or just like I said about the funny things that happen while doing the list, like just little funny things happen all the time. And I know that that's his calling card.
Yes.
I think what happened was people don't always believe that it's possible to still have that communication. And I certainly was one of those people. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't just like willingly believe this at all. Like, I consider myself a pretty logical person, but I was getting it in a logical way because I'm doing a to-do list and it's his to-do list. So it makes sense that I want to know why he wanted to do these things. So it's like, oh, well, what's this about, Dad? You know, so that's why it started coming through. And the more I understood and the more that I forgave, the more it would come through. And I feel now my sense of what happens when we die, I don't know where we go. I don't know what happens to the soul or the energy, but I do believe that whatever hangups we had in life are gone. I do believe we just become pure love. And I think it is true that spirits who are gone are still so connected and so invested in their loved ones who are still living and are actually helping us to be happy, or actually helping us. So, I mean, you say you're living for three, but it's also sort of like three are living for you.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
You could look at it that way as well, even though they're technically passed on, you know, they still love you and they're still cheering for you, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting that the timing of having this conversation with you, because a week ago, Teresa Caputo came to Santa Barbara and spoke here. Are you familiar with
her? Yes, the Long Island medium. Yeah.
I know she's very out there and all of that, but I'm open to these things.
Oh, she's really good.
And to be in the theater here in Santa Barbara with, you know, thousands of people and to hear her speak to the people that she did, I was right there. I was, you know, 5 feet away from her when she was talking to people, and there was no way any of it was planned or staged, and there was no possible way she could have had the information. And the way that she just explained it is that when they pass, they are still here though, watching us, right? They're always with us. And sometimes they do say things to us, or they want us to hear something or know something. And I believe that as children, our intuition and our ability to hear all of that is much better, but it's sort of taken away from us as we grow older. We sort of lose it, right? Because we're not either encouraged, or it scares us, or we're not paying attention to it. But I absolutely pay attention to all the messages that I might get, to any intuition or feeling, gut feeling I have, or thoughts that I have. And I just think that the world is such a more beautiful and magnificent place if you're open to that. It really is.
Well, because it's wonder.
It's wonder. It's wonder. And it's incredible. And I think even the hope that you've given to people today, that you can be closer to someone after they've passed. You know, we don't lose them forever if you are intentional about keeping the connection, and even you've grown the connection.
I mean, I still have my times though, where I get very sad, and I wish that it could just be him in body sitting across from me in a restaurant, you know, and be like, let's catch up, you know? And there's times, especially what happens when I accomplish something big, like when I got my book deal, when the book actually came out. I mean, I was a mess the night before my book launch, just crying and crying. And, you know, I told my husband, he didn't get to see this. This is amazing. I can't believe that this happened. And my husband will remind me, but he's the reason this is happening. Like, he helped you to make this happen. So of course he sees it. You know, it's just, I just have to imagine what it looks like. And, you know, in that particular case, what started happening for me was, okay, well, so here's a weird thing that happened. 2 days before the book launch, I found out that Alison Dubois, who's the psychic who inspired the TV show Medium with Patricia Arquette, do you remember that show? She wanted to interview me.
Wow.
So I got to be on her podcast, like perfect timing, you know? Like, Like, if anybody's going to interview me, it should be the psychic medium who's on TV. So I got to have this reassurance from her. I mean, she wasn't giving me like a reading. I wasn't paying for a reading, but she was channeling him. And she was saying, he's really proud of you. I just want you to know that. And like minutes before I went on to talk to her, I got a really quick image of him in my head. And what I saw was like a red carpet with like those, what do you call those things? It's like a, not a fence, but like the velvet rope with like the gold little podiums. Like he was standing there behind them with like a crowd of people behind him. And it was, I felt like it was an instant image. So what I saw him saying to me was like, oh, I see what's happening. And there's a lot of other people who are going to want to see what's happening too. So get ready. Yes. And that's what happened.
Yes. Yes. And Teresa also talked about it, that they are there in those moments with us. And what I'm seeing when you just describe this, and it leads me to something I want to ask you about, is I see sort of a movie premiere. This book sounds like it would be amazing as a movie. Is it already?
Yeah, I've had a vision of that for a long time. You know what's so weird is I have a vision of the dress. Like the dress I will wear on a red carpet is the vision. That's, I mean, I've had that vision for 6 years. That's what's so weird about it. I don't know yet. It's being talked about. Mm-hmm. And I can't reveal too much because I'm not allowed to.
Yes, but it sounds, well, what an amazing film that would be. Well, gosh, this has been amazing. I'm so excited for all the things coming ahead for you. And I want to thank you so much for giving me so much time today. I really appreciate it. So can you tell everyone where they can find you and reach you? And besides, of course, ordering the book, which is amazing.
Yeah, I'm My Father's List on Instagram. And if you want to go buy my book online, the best place for you to go is my website. And that's bylaracarney.com, which is like a reporter's byline. And, you know, I just want to say for your listeners, you know, when you talk about a person's why, that I think is what matters the most when it comes to a person finding their voice and using it in the world. I mean, I had a really big why. And it was holding me back, the fear of that why, for a really long time. But it's like once the why got so big that it included other people, meaning my activism and meaning these other families that had gone through a similar experience, that was when I could finally surrender to the journey I was supposed to go on. So if there's someone out there who had something happen and they're trying to figure out a way to express it or turn it into, you know, like an alchemist, turn it into gold and be able to give it to other people somehow, I really recommend joining some kind of, not necessarily a support group, but some kind of a group with people with similar experiences. And you might just find the impetus to go forward.
Yeah, a community of people going through.
Like, do the thing.
And it's interesting too, because I call this Do It Now because of obviously the impact that it had on me to lose people so suddenly and to know that tomorrow was not promised to any of us, as you certainly have learned. And it is, so it's important to know your why, but then it's also important to take action. So we can't just, we can't have these dreams and these bucket lists and all these things and not take action and start living this big, beautiful life. Right. Which is full of wonder. So thank you so much for today and for sharing that. And I'm so glad that everyone can find your book at bylaracarney.com, correct?
Yep.
Great. Wonderful. And we will look forward to your next book and the movie. I'm going to be rooting for that movie.
Thank you.
Keep manifesting, thinking about that dress.
It's in there. It's going to happen someday.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you so much for today, Laura.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.